what I'd like to do is to give you a brief expose of how I interpret the elections yesterday, and then I'll turn to Matt and Alan to follow. Let me provide the following. I think what I'd like to do is give you a view of what this means short-term for Turkey, the next month or two or so, what it means midterm, next years, and also what it means for the U.S.-Turkish relationship. So you can think of it as a three-part expose. I think in terms of the short-term impact, this is probably the best outcome in terms of political stability in Turkey. And what I mean by that is the following. If we had had another AKP government with a supermajority, similar to what we had in the last 5 years, with almost two-thirds of the seats, with basically no need to compromise or talk to the rest of the political parties in the parliament, we would have faced a Turkey that looked pretty much similar to the Turkey of the last 6 months in terms of its ability to elect a president, which the country now has to. That's the first mandate of the parliament, as well as its ability to sustain a stable government. We don't have that. We also don't have a slim majority government. So if this was an AKP government with, 280, 90 seats out of a 550-member parliament, it would have been a government, but its stability would have been seriously checked. Its ability to remain in a stable political environment would have been checked. We don't have that either. So I think it's neither a supermajority nor a slim majority, but what I call a comfortable majority, something in between. And that's important, and that's good for political stability in Turkey in the short term, now that the country is heading up to the first important political task it has to take on, that is elect the next president. This is the first mandate of the parliament. You can look at this in the news pages, and we'll do a report on this later on. We'll distribute it out. It looks likely that Turkey will probably form government sometime in mid-August. And if everything goes according to schedule, forming the parliament, electing a speaker, electing the president, it should have a president elected by mid-September. That's in the best-case scenario where, political stability pretty much is granted. This is actually, the ideal outcome would be, in terms of political stability in Turkey, this kind of an outcome. Though we can discuss in the Q&A what the chances are, whether there are scenarios that could throw a wrench into this very complicated and very tight calendar of forming a parliament, electing a speaker, electing a president, forming a government all at the same time, all ahead of a referendum, as you know, that's coming up on October 21st, in which Turkey is going to change the way it elects a president. So even then, I think there's a great amount of political uncertainty because Turkey will be electing a president while changing the way it elects a president. That's our best case scenario. That's what we're faced with today. Let me now turn and look at the implications of the elections for midterm, what it means beyond the next few months for the broader question of where Turkey's stands. If I look at the election results, as you know, the AKP came very strong with almost 47% of the vote. Leftist Nationalist Republican People's Party, CHP, came about 21%, and Nationalist Right-Wing, MHP, came about 14%. And the other party that was able to cross the 10% national threshold and enter the parliament is Kurdish Nationalist DTP, Democratic Society Party, which has about two dozen seats in the 550-member parliament. When I look at the bigger picture of voter distribution and how certain parties did so well in certain regions, such as the AKP did, AKP's phenomenal performance in central Turkey, the Anatolian heartland, the Euphrates Valley, and eastern Turkey, where in some provinces it did over 70%. That's incredible, I think, for a multi-party democracy. We see a couple of factors emerging, and I think one of them is that we see a fault line of Turkish politics being consolidated. What I mean by the old fault line is the following. For those of us who follow Turkish politics, this has basically been a political scene of four main movements: center-right, nationalists, leftists, and Islamists, or Milligarish or National Outlook movement of the Welfare Party. We saw them coalesce with one another, we saw them fight against one another, but nevertheless, these are the four movements that have formed political parties and governments over the last, pretty much since 1946, since Turkey became a multi-party democracy. What the elections show us is that one of these powerful of these four movements, the most powerful, has exited that center-right. In other words, what represented center-right, its political parties, its leadership, is not represented in the parliament anymore. And in return, it seems to me that the AKP has consolidated at least some of that base, engulfing the center-right and turning into a bigger party than it has ever been because of the consolidation of these two powerful movements. What this leaves with us, I think, is for the near future, the midterm, is a Turkey in which this new AKP plus center-right, let's call it AKP on steroids, quotation marks, is going to be faced and challenged by the other the two remaining political movements, the leftists and the nationalists. This is a political fault line that always existed. It has been consolidated with the departure of one of the main movements. Now we're down to three, where the alienation is one versus the two other. And this is where I think the country seems almost split in the middle. If you look at certain provinces where you add up the votes of CHP and MHP, for example, the nationalist left wings and the nationalist right wing party, you're going to see that in a huge bunch of provinces, they are basically on par, the two parties' added votes are on par with the AKP, and this is actually a good exercise for those of you who can follow the election websites. So in other words, we are seeing a country that's split along these lines of the two parties and the AKP facing one another, and which I think, once again, taking it back to presidential elections, reminds me that Turkey really needs to build consensus in the run-up to the presidential elections to avoid the split further polarizing the country. Because otherwise, I think there is potential now that we're seeing a number of provinces split equally along these lines of 50-50 almost, along the lines of MHP and CHP, where they are 50%, and AKP opposing that at 50% as well. There is, however, another fault line emerging, and that I think is a little bit more alarming than the previous one I discussed, and that's a new one. And I was in Turkey for a long while, about 3 weeks before the elections. I went back for what I called back immersion. I was raised in Istanbul, so it's not really immersion, but it still counts for that. And I came back with a number of impressions. I was able to discuss how, for example, the presidential elections process is shaping the way the Turks has shaped the way Turks have voted, and how, especially in the Anatolian heartland, in the provinces, basically starting with Western Anatolia, Kütahya and Isparta, and east of that, all the way up to Erzurum in the east, the most important issue seemed to be the presidential elections issue, where people looked at this and said, this was how, in quotation marks, a religious, candidate was prevented from being elected. What does that mean for this new fault line I'm discussing? For a long time, the opposite of secular in Turkey was Islamist, and the opposite of Islamist was secular. I think that's changing, and I think this is the new fault line that's emerging. Because the presidential elections process was cast as, vote for a religious president versus efforts to block a religious president, and I'm quoting both sides here. And I think because in this debate, which I heard across Turkey, especially in the rural areas, the AKP has cast itself on the side of Muslim versus secular. There's a new fault line emerging in Turkey, which is exactly this, Muslim versus secular. For a long time, the opposite of Islamist used to be Muslim, and the opposite of Muslim used to be Islamist. That's not the case anymore. I think with these elections, now we are basically seeing the country deciding based on these two main identities. And in a way, I think we can see the elections as identity referendum. What I'm suggesting is not that these people, there's nothing wrong with these people identifying as Muslims, of course. The problem is that they're identifying as Muslims in politics. Turkey is a Muslim country. It's, I would say, over 90% of the Turks are believing Muslims. Many of them practice. That's not what we're debating. Then what we're debating is the identification of the people is changing, and it's changed now to the point where almost half of the Turks identify as Muslims as opposed to the secular identification. That is ultimately a losing argument for the secular view in Turkey. There's no way you can win against this kind of a division of a society where society is cast along the lines of Muslim versus secular, where it's no more a choice of, a political system, but it's a choice of identity that comes into politics. And I think in this regard, the elections, therefore, can be seen as an identity referendum along these two lines. Let me now move on to the last part of my discussion, which is the implications for the U.S. It seems to me that, you can look at all of this and say, well, this is all Turkey's internal politics, true. But I think it's not without consequences for the United States, exactly because of the last point that I discussed. I'll give you one stat. This is by TESEV, which is an Istanbul-based think tank. They did a poll last year and, asked about people's identification. They said, what do you see yourself as? Are you Turkish? Are you Muslim? Are you Turkish and Muslim? Are you one of these exclusively? Are you European? What's your main identity? The number of people who identified as Muslims went in that poll. According to this poll, it went up since 2002. That number increased by 10%. self-identification. It went from 36 to 45. The number of people, the increase in the number of AKP votes is about 12%. It went from 34 to 46. To me, these two trends are overlapping, and I think we are seeing a way the Turks identify themselves. This is not about who they are. I should make that point again and clearly. It's not about the fact that whether or not Turkey is a Muslim country. It is, but it's the fact that Turks are looking at politics through the identification of being Muslims or not. And I think this does have consequences for the United States, especially because in the post-9/11 world, when we're trying to prevent the idea of clash of civilizations and religious blocs emerging, it is emerging in the minds of some people in Turkey. And this is why I think it is important from the perspective of U.S. policymakers. It's there, and it's become stronger than it has ever been in terms of identification. Of course, there are ways to deal with this. I think the AKP has shown before the elections that it's a party with willingness to move to the center-right, become a party of mainstream Turkish politics, and I think the party's efforts in this regard to appoint center-right candidates was extremely welcome. They did receive a lot of votes based on that. So the question is, what will the AKP do next? In other words, now that we're seeing a second AKP government, a clean page in the relationship, one of the reasons I think we have seen an increased identification of Turks as Muslims, dropping the Turkish identification in favor of the second one coming up, Islam, the Muslim identity, is what's going on in Turkey's neighborhood, understandably so. You know, there's a huge war being waged, the Iraq war. The unintended consequences of that war, you have to take that into account. The PKK issue, which we'll discuss in the Q&A, I'm sure. All of that is true. But on the other hand, I think there's another element of what has happened, another aspect that has driven the change in Turkey, this change of identification. And it's got to do, quite put it simply, with the rhetoric that we have. Coming from the government, it ebbs and tides. There are some weeks when we hear nothing. There are some weeks when we hear a lot of stuff critical of the United States. We saw quite critical rhetoric, for example, right before the elections. Of course, this is understandable. It's domestic politics, but this is not how friends treat one another. We'll probably see a period of quiet, but it will go back up and down. And to me, what's really puzzling is that this is in the background of incredibly good ties between the United States and Turkey, specifically between the AKP government and the United States, where so much is happening, so many great things are being done. We know about some of them. I have a feeling we don't know about some of them. But increasingly so, there's a blossoming relationship. Yet this is not how the Turks think or hear about it. In other words, what the Turks hear inside the country from their government is not that Turkey is cooperating in so many avenues with the United States, but they basically hear a lot of negative rhetoric. To use a quote from one of my favorite poets, Mevlana, who's known as Rumi here in the West, you know, olduğun gibi görün ya da göründüğün gibi ol. In other words, act the way you are or be the way you act. The AKP's attitude on the relationship with the United States. You know, either the AKP will take ownership of this blossoming relationship, which is, you know, blossoming in many avenues, and explain this to the Turks, why this is important and why this makes sense for the Turks, and which would actually bring the relationship around, and I think this would be a good way out of it. Of course, it would help the AKP, and I think any Turk who wants to build a U.S.-Turkish relationship, if, you know, certain steps were taken regarding the PKK issue. This is the biggest issue that today shapes Turkish attitudes towards the United States. And if you want to provide fodder to the cannon of people who are going to build this relationship again and out in public, the best fodder for the cannon would be U.S. actions on the PKK issue. I'm going to stop here. I wanted to end on an optimistic note.